slowly drunk on moonshine brewed on the far side of the walled ville, in a quarter that was allegedly under scrutiny from his sec force. In fact, it was the home of an illicit still that he kept from being closed down because it supplied the best moonshine in this or any other ville. He had a large pitcher in front of him, and it was almost empty.
Girl!
The double doors at the far end opened, and one of the red-headed maids he kept slid into the room. Her dark eyes and Hispanic coloring belied the authenticity of her hair.
Yes, sir. What can I do for you, Baron?
Plenty, maybe. Maybe later. Give me more of this hooch, girl. Look lively about it.
With which, he drained the jug and sent it spinning down the table toward her. She took it smoothly and turned without a word, exiting the room silently.
Dirty slut. Think I don't know what y'all say about me when I'm not around? Think I can't hear in this house? Shit, just give me a sign.
He had just drained his glass when the door opened, and instead of the maid he was expecting, Crow entered with the jug of moonshine.
Hell, fire, and damnation. I do believe sometimes my old daddy was right, and there truly is a greater force.
That's as may be, but my people could have told you that a long time ago.
There's a lot of things your people could tell me if I choose to listen, but I'm only interested in listening to you right now. What's been going on?
Plenty. The usual fighting among the workers and their families.
Shit, what do we expect? They all hate each other from a distance, let alone when they're real uptight and close. It's a wonder they ain't all chilled each other already. Ah, fuck 'em. As long as enough stay alive to open up the well.
Crow bit hard on his tongue.
Any of them tried to blow the well and got caught?
No, but there was an attempt to blow part of the refinery a few nights back.
What?
Silas sat forward, knocking a dirty plate off the table as his feet clattered to the floor.
Why didn't Mile tell me this?
'Cause he didn't know. Carter and his people stumbled on the attempt and chased off the saboteur. Didn't get him, because he was using a wag. Mean bastard of a bomb he left, too. But JB managed to defuse it. Brave man, smart with it. Ran a check on the Plasex used, and it didn't come from work stocks. He reckons that maybe it isn't any of the workers.
So why didn't they bring Mile in?
Oh, they told him eventually. And he left it to me to report, because he knew I was headed here. But they had to check him and the rest of Sec out first.
Shit, they didn't trust him?
Isn't that why you hired them? To trust no one?
Baron Silas thought about that, then nodded soberly.
Yeah, of course. So what are they planning to do about it?
It's an interesting kind of plan.
Crow drew a map from his vest pocket.
I stopped off downstairs and got this map of the site from your study. Got me a pencil as well.
He produced a finely sharpened writing utensil. He spread the map out on the table and took an empty glass, then lifted the jug.
May I? This could take some time to explain.
You take all the time you need.
The Baron indicated that Crow should pour some moonshine. He poured himself a glass and took a sip, feeling the burning spirit coruscate down his throat before warming his chest and the pit of his belly. He took a deep breath, then started to draw lines on the map, marking in the 12 points JB had identified as being weak spots, and explaining the way that Ryan intended to cover the ground with only 7 people. It took him almost an hour and several glasses of moonshine to explain fully the way in which Ryan and his companions had been operating at the worksite and camp, and the way in which they intended to operate. Eventually, he stood back from the table, the marked-up map in front of him.
So that's it?
Crow nodded.
And they reckon that the sabotage isn't from the camp at all, but from an outside source?
Again, the Native American merely nodded.
This is gonna be more difficult than I ever thought.
The night was still and silent. Dean exhaled, his breath misting on the cold air, and mingling with the mist created by the breath of his horse, forming a cloud around them. He looked at his wrist chron. It was only halfway through his watch, and he tugged gently on the mane of his mount to turn it slightly to the left, giving him a better view down the pipeline toward the storage tanks. There was nowhere for him to huddle, no recess to provide even the slightest touch of closed-in warmth. He shivered under his heavy coat. So far, there had been nothing. If it stayed that way, then it would be a wasted night. But it didn't stay that way. As he turned his horse the other way, to survey the opposite direction, he heard the distant rumble of a wag engine across the desert. It came from behind him. No, from the direction he was facing. But then again...
Hot pipe! three of the bastards!
Jack and Christy had been the first to know they were coming. Christy's muti sense and Jack's acute hearing had given them the indication before the others would have any clue. Jack was out by the derrick, and he could tell immediately that there were three wags. One was headed for the storage tanks, one for the refinery area, and one toward him. He wheeled his horse around so that he could ride to the blind side of the derrick and see across the still and flat land beyond. His sense of direction told him that the wag nearest to him was circling around to come his way, the pitch of the engine changing as it moved behind dunes and hummocks of dry earth. Christy felt her hair tighten on her scalp before she registered the sound. The Titian red curls drew in close to her skin, winding around her neck. She stilled her breathing so that she could hear better. Although not as sharp as Jack's, she had sensitive hearing and could tell that one of the wags was headed for the refinery area, which was where she was stationed. Christy had been assigned first watch on the two pump houses joined by the covered walkway, leaving the farthest refinery building unattended for the watch. It was also the building that faced out onto the desert, and although she had questioned Ryan as to whether it would be better to cover that and so keep the unprotected side of the entire refinery covered, she had accepted his reasoning that this way they could keep more of the actual machinery covered. It had been a gamble, and the cards were falling badly. The wags were now approaching at speed and were audible to every member of the party.
Three wags. Looks like one of them is headed for the storage tanks.
Check. One is going for the outlying refinery block.
Fire blast. Anyone get a direction on the third?
Around back to wellhead. I take it. I'm nearest you. I'll ride over. Doc, Mildred, you're nearest Christy, so you head that way.
Good. Dean, I'm nearest you, so I'll come to you. Head for the tanks. What I want to know is how the hell they knew those were unprotected points.
Maybe just luck.
A whole shitload of luck if it is. Let's get moving.
The question of how the three wags knew to head for areas that weren't under watch was something that had crossed the minds of all of the companions, but right now there were more important matters to attend to. The wags were closing in fast, and although the distances involved weren't that great, the horses the companions were using weren't the fastest creatures any of them had ever seen. It was a race against time when there was no time. Jack turned his mount and started to drum his heels against the beast's flanks, spurring it into action and heading it toward the far side of the derrick. As he gripped the mane of the horse with one hand, his other drew the Colt Python and readied the blaster for action. Firing from a moving animal was harder than from a wag, but Jack had sure instincts, and this should compensate. Besides which, he knew the armorer would be close behind. JB was also whipping his mount to as much speed as it could muster, galloping it across the dry, sandy earth toward the derrick that stood upright against the clear night sky. The sound of the wag approaching from the blind side was now clearly distinguishable from the other wag noises. The armorer reached behind him with his free hand and pulled the Smith & Wesson M4000. The blaster was loaded with its deadly cargo of barbed metal flechettes that would spread across a wide area, the jagged metal inflicting a maximum amount of damage to whoever was in its path. The wag engine cut out, and over the pounding of his mount's hooves, Jack could hear two or three men moving out of the wag and around the derrick, one to the right and two to the left. Shifting his balance to compensate, Jack held his blaster steady and also spoke into the handset.
JB, wag head tree. Two on left side, one right. I'll take left.
Okay, I have you in sight. About a minute behind. I'll veer right.
Jack didn't bother to respond. He knew what JB would be doing, and he could leave that in the man's capable hands. Over the sound of his own speed, Jack could hear the faint voices of the two men. They were making no attempt to disguise their position or actions, which spoke to Jack of an overconfidence that would make them vulnerable. One of the men was placing an explosive device in the small brick pump house that housed the valves to control the derrick's flow of raw oil. He bent over the timer, lighting his actions with a small lamp.
Watch the lamp, Stoop. There's only one of the set coming, all right, but why make it too easy for him? Shit, he looks like a real weirdie.
Shut the fuck up, will you? I just need to set it for enough time for us to get out of here, and then just chill the fucker, will you?
Whatever you say.
The man raised his blaster and took aim at Jack as he rode closer. He wanted to squeeze off one good shot and down the albino bastard before he had a chance to return fire. The only problem for the rifleman was that the lamp used by his partner cast enough ambient light around him to highlight him clearly against the darkness of the derrick. Jack could see that the man was taking aim at him and bit into the horse's flanks alternately with his left and right boots. The movements made the horse respond by zigzagging, taking Jack on a suddenly erratic course.
Jeez, the bastard's moving!
His partner was still absorbed in setting the bomb's timer,